Hey everybody, before we get started, I just wanted to jump on because we are so excited to announce that Restore registration is officially open. We can't wait to be with you again this year. It's going to be on September 5th through 7th at the Mountain America Expo Center in Sandy, Utah. That's the evening of September 5th and then all day on the 6th and the 7th. 3 days of incredible speakers, poets, musicians, and artists. We really think that what we have planned will blow you away again this year, so you won't want to miss it. Go to faithmatters.org/restore for tickets and we'll see you there. Hey everybody, this is Aubrey Chavez from Faith Matters. It's General Conference weekend. Time to dig up the bingo cards and park yourself in front of the TV for a couple of days with some cinnamon rolls and a Diet Coke or two to soak in some inspiration and maybe encounter some discomfort. We thought we'd re-release a re-edited episode with Patrick Mason that we feel like is really timely. In this conversation with Patrick, we talk about creating what Brian McLaren has called a four-stage community. The stages that we're referencing here come from Brian's book, Faith After Doubt, and refer to different stages in which people might find themselves in their journeys of faith. McLaren defines these stages as simplicity, where faith is very straightforward, complexity, where faith becomes somewhat more complicated, perplexity, the stage where questions become more important than answers, and previous faith paradigms often undergo massive shifts, and then finally harmony, where the gifts of each stage are realized and integrated. It seems to us that these diverse reactions and feelings that often are engendered by General Conference are often the result of being members of a community in which all four of these stages are manifest. Messages that often seem to be tailored to members at a particular stage of faith may not resonate with listeners at a different stage, and so this can feel like misalignment, and it can sometimes even feel jarring. So in this conversation, Patrick points to a couple of practices that have helped us to turn that dissonance that we sometimes feel into a gift. For one, being intentional about deeply listening to those that we might be inclined to disagree with, and orienting ourselves toward generosity, asking what virtues and values might they be speaking from. Because as Patrick points out, there's a real potential for growth when we choose to stay in relationships with people we disagree with. As Eugene England points out in his essay, "The Church is as True as the Gospel," in many ways, the struggle is the point. Patrick is the Leonard Arrington Chair of Mormon History and Culture at Utah State University and the author of several books, including Restoration, God's Call to the 21st Century World. He brought wisdom, insight, and optimism that he always seems to meld so beautifully. And so we really hope that you can take what feels valuable to you in this episode and use it as we come together in solidarity as a community this weekend with all our varied life experiences and perspectives to be inspired by and stretched by General Conference. Patrick Mason, we're so happy to have you back again. Thanks so much for coming back on for another conversation.
Thanks, Aubrey. Always good to be here.
Always. Hey, so we wanted to have a conversation about something that I've heard a lot of feedback about. What do you say when somebody finishes a book, when somebody finishes Restoration and the feeling is like, yeah, I would like to be a part of that church, but that is not my reality.
Yeah. No, I hear that a lot, but I think, you know, I'm okay with the fact that the reality doesn't always meet our ideals, right? That I think it's and no doubt the kind of vision that I laid out in Restoration, all of that is aspirational. It's mm-hmm. It's grounded in reality. It's grounded in real things, right? We can point to things where there are seeds where there's some possibility there, and maybe it's not fully realized, but it's still there. And but you're right. The challenge is then how do you to slip back into just kind of the everyday world? That if I want to get like a little bit theological for a moment, this is the way that that a lot of theologians talk about the kingdom of God in the New Testament. So sometimes Jesus says like, "Hey, the kingdom of God is right here. It's with you. You're the kingdom of God." Like, huzzah, right? And then other times it's like, no, it's like on some way distant horizon. And so there's this sense of like, it's both already here and it's not yet arrived. And that's the tension that we have to live in as Christians. But it's the tension we live in, you know, as Latter-day Saints too. I mean, we both realize there's like something special going on. There's something incredible about our community. There's something really great, but it's also not what it's meant to be yet. And I think when we lean too much into the we've arrived, then that leads to a kind of passivity, all is well in Zion, like we don't have to do anything. That's a danger. But when we lean too much in the like, this isn't yet what it's supposed to be, this isn't yet what I aspire for it to be, then, you know, then that becomes dangerous too. Because we're never satisfied. It's never good enough. It's never, we're always going to be disappointed. So I think a lot of it is we just have to kind of create our own little sub communities, whether that be Faith Matters, right? I think Faith Matters has done a great job of creating community within the broader church, or what maybe it's at the dinner table with just a handful of friends in your community. But in some ways, you've got to create the church that you want to be a part of while also participating in a larger church as well.
Yeah. Go ahead, Aubrey. Sorry.
Well, before we move on from that, I think, you know, couldn't there be some danger too in creating a community, in creating your own little echo chamber that actually sort of divides you from the broader community? You know, like I appreciate some breathing room. Like you need like these spaces of grace that Brian McLaren mentioned recently. And like that's been so beneficial for me. Like just somewhere where it feels like I can like relax a little bit and trust that people are, I mean, that I can trust the people I'm speaking with and that we can hold a little bit of space for each other, but in an effort to bring that back to our broader community, right? Like as soon as it sets you apart, then we have a problem again.
That's exactly right. And it's that, you know, not every space can perform all those functions all at once. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, yesterday I had lunch with a guy I'd never met before, but we met and we just like hit it off immediately. Like, and we were just simpatico and we were able to talk about things, you know, including church related things in ways that I wouldn't talk about in elders quorum, right? In front of a big group. And I don't think that's hypocrisy. That's not being two-faced. It's just what you're talking about, you know, being in spaces where you're comfortable having conversations that maybe necessarily aren't always appropriate for a larger and more diverse group. I always remember when I was teaching at Claremont, I had Laurel Thatcher Ulrich come to my class once, and you know, this like a feminist icon. And this was not just a Mormon history students. I mean, it was all kinds of students, and so they all know her, you know, as just this incredible feminist scholar. And but they also know that she was a Mormon, and she talked about this a little bit too. And one of the non-LDS students asked, I think very bravely, but they said, you know, here you are, like you're this icon of feminism. Like, how in the world do you stay in this church, right? That you're a part of. And she just looked at them immediately, and she said, it's my church too. Right. It's not just their church. You know, the other people don't own the church. It's my church too. And so I want to create the church and be a part of the church that I'm going to help create. Now I love that sentiment. I think that's really important for everybody to kind of own their own membership and their own space within the church. But the flip side of that, the other side of the coin is it's not just your church. It's their church too. So I don't want it to be the Church of Patrick Mason. It's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So it's Jesus Christ Church first and foremost, but then also all of the Latter-day Saints. I'm just one of them. So there's always, again, it's about tension. It's about paradox, both creating space for yourself, but also creating space for other people, and recognize that other people inhabit that space as well.
Yeah. One of the things we've talked a lot about on this podcast is sort of like stages of faith development. One of our very favorite frameworks comes from Brian McLaren. He has a four-stage framework that he calls simplicity, then complexity, then perplexity, then harmony or solidarity. And that's been a really useful framework for us, but it can be tempting to try to sort of just like find your people. I mean, especially once you start thinking in these terms and separate yourself from the others. In Planted, you say Latter-day Saints must find a way to not simply coexist, but to truly embrace diversity. When we think of diversity, we're often thinking of gender or racial or sexual orientation or whatever it is. But I'm curious, if we took that sentence from Planted and applied it to the context of like of stages of faith, like how can we embrace diversity when it comes to we're all in different places in our faith journey?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I mean, I immediately think of Paul's metaphor of the body of Christ from 1 Corinthians 12, and everybody knows this, but where he really talks about how the body of Christ needs all the members. It needs all the gifts. And none of the members gets to say to the other, I'm so important and I don't need you, right? Or I've progressed, you know, I've evolved to a certain point, and so I've left you behind. I don't need you anymore. And the stages of faith models, and you know, there's lots of them out there, but the ones that I like the best are the ones that recognize the goods that are inherent in each of the stages, both the goods and the limitations. And so in a community, recognizing that everybody's going to be at a different place because of their experience, their perspective, their worldview, just their own proclivities, that actually the community is better. The body of Christ is stronger when all the members are there, with all the people in all of their different stages. And I think that like, it's really hard to do, right? Especially when you've kind of, you've moved through, you've kind of passed through one stage and you can remember what it was like. And now you're at a different place. And maybe you even are appreciative of the good things that you learned from that stage, but you're like, oh man, I'm so much happier now. I'm in a better place. It's just a very human thing to say, wouldn't it be better if everybody was like me? I mean, that is the ego. But I think what Paul is really pushing back on there is like, no, it would not be better if everybody were like you. That would be a terrible body if it were all eyes or all ears or all hearts, no matter how important each of those parts are. And so it's really an act of humility to be able to say, you know, I need not just I can coexist with other people in other stages, but I need them. And they act as checks on me, and you know, when I might even have things to learn. One of the most important things for my own spirituality over the last few years has been a kind of intentional spiritual discipline of listening extra hard to the people who are different than me, and especially those that I'm inclined to disagree with. And I already know who those people are. In general conference, when they stand up at the pulpit, I already know that I'm inclined to disagree with them, right? Mm-hmm. Or they may not be my favorite. Especially, you know, when certain ward members stand up, I already know that I'm inclined to disagree with them. Versus others, you know, when my friends get up, it's like, ooh, I want to hear what great things they have to say that completely confirm my worldview and make me feel good about myself. But you know, this is what Jesus says. If you only have love for your friends, like that's not great. And that's not good enough. And so I think there's a kind of spiritual discipline of actually leaning in extra hard. And it's paid dividends for me, certainly, to say, wow, this person sees the world differently than me. They may be in a different stage of faith than I am. So actually, what can I learn from them? At least it's been useful for me.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that, Brian talked about, and this is at Restore, but he's talked about it elsewhere, not trying to create a, what he calls a stage four community, but a four stage community in which all stages are not only welcome, but are welcoming of the other stages. But I want to ask sort of really in a really practical way, is it possible? I've never seen it done. At least the way I'm imagining it, where we're saying this is truly a four-stage community. All are welcome. Nobody's going to feel marginalized. Nobody's going to feel like they don't quite fit the mold. Everyone's going to be just really tolerant and really accepting of wherever they are. So I guess A, is that possible? And B, is that really what we're looking for? Or am I missing the point if I'm looking to go to church and there's just a radical inclusivity and tolerance and acceptance?
Because I think there's a way you could define Zion. Like, I would imagine that, like, Zion is a stage four community. Like, it's a community where everybody's in harmony. Isn't that the goal?
Yeah, well, I think there'd be a lot of people in, say, stage one or two who say, well, what Zion is actually everybody in my stage, too, you know? And I think the hardest thing is that especially when you're, like, kind of, like, two, you know, stages apart, it's really hard to see each other. When you're one stage apart, maybe, right? There's a kind of recognition there. When you're two or three, again, depending on the numbers, it can be, you like the worldviews seem so incommensurate And there's even, I think one of the downsides of a kind of simplicity worldview is you actually, that there can be a temptation to wish that complexity didn't exist. When you're in Eden, it looks pretty great, and you don't want to leave. The outside world looks pretty scary and dangerous. And vice versa, right? Once you're kind of out and you realize the goods that come from that, you're like, oh man, I'd never want to go back there. And so this is the challenge. I mean, I believe, Tim, I mean, I think a Zion community, has to include everybody. It has to create space for everybody. It has to create space for people with real doubts and real questions, but who want to be there. I'll never forget one of my ward members back in California. I think I had just given a planted about Fireside and stuff, and she was great. She's just an amazing, amazing woman. We all know lots of people like this who are just incredible Christians who just. They're very much on the simplicity side. And she said, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate that you're trying to create space for all these people, but I'm not interested, right? Like I have zero interest in going there with you. And, you know, and I realized in that moment, in that conversation, I was kind of you know what? I don't have much interest in pulling you into my space either, because you're doing just fine where you are. Where you are and your understanding of the gospel is motivating such acts of Christian service and love for other people better than I. And so who am I to pull you into some other place when frankly, you're doing just fine. So I think our communities, it's so hard. It takes humility on our part and then charity and empathy to see the good in other people. But we've got to create spaces for people wherever they are.
Yeah. And as I've thought through this too, I've wondered if there is a really specific purpose that each sort of stage is contributing to the organization generally. And I've wondered if the role, and I'm just making this up, but the role of sort of a early stages, stage one and two, is to create real sort of boundaries that may be necessary to even have what can be called a cohesive community. And if the role of stage three is to sort of push things forward to raise all of the most difficult issues. Yeah. And, you know, the role of the later stages may be to sort of just be at the edge of inside, sometimes pushing where necessary and, you know, just maybe holding the tension of not always feeling super welcome, but sort of remaining regardless, you know,
and maybe being the bridge builders because they've been in each of those spaces. So they can have a direct kind of sympathy for those people. And so create bridges between those others.
Yeah, totally. And one interesting thing that we've seen, I think, in Protestantism generally is that there's been sort of a continuous schisming, right? Why is it better to all be showing up to the same church building on Sunday when we're so different?
Because then you get the church of eyes or the church of ears or the church of livers, right? And that's not the vision. I mean, you talk to any Protestant, you know, any kind of serious Protestant who's really thoughtful about this, and they will acknowledge the scandal of Christianity is its division. They know from reading the New Testament, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, the same thing that sent Joseph Smith into the grove. And this is the scandal that plagues all of Christianity, and it's most accentuated within Protestantism. And so we don't want to go down that route. I mean, I'm pretty Catholic friendly. Went to Notre Dame, cheered for Notre Dame against BYU.
No worries. We can edit that part out, Patrick.
No, that's the most important thing. That's my identity. I'm a stage six Notre Dame, Latter-day Saint. But I think Roman Catholicism, over its 2,000 years of history, it's certainly not perfect, has a lot of issues. But one of the things it's figured out how to do is to create lots of communities for lots of people, depending on kind of their own proclivities, their own how they relate with God, how they relate to other people, the things that they're passionate about. But to do that all in communion, literally, the thing that binds them all is the celebration of the Lord's Supper, of Mass, mm-hmm. of their coming together. And so you can have Jesuits and Franciscans and you know, all these different kinds of orders that they've created within the church, but all in communion together around the thing that matters yeah. most. So I think, you know, we're young, we're small, you know, we've prioritized unity, I think, in really special ways, but that can also be stifling. And so what might it look like to have voluntary communities of affiliation, right, where people get together because they're like-minded, but then what the church provides is, especially the institutional church, that 2-hour block on Sunday, what that provides is a place where we all come together, regardless of whatever sub-communities we've created throughout the week.
Go ahead, Aubrey.
That idea was so powerful to me when I heard this idea of that maybe the goal is to have all four stages and like we're all supposed to be there together. And I felt like both totally convicted and inspired, because I think that's a way that, you know, narcissism sort of slipped in, and I felt very, you know, proud when I could listen to someone and identify like, oh, I recognize that you are describing simplicity, and like, even though I felt like that gave me more understanding and some compassion, I think there is a way where that actually really did kind of like feed this narcissism that like, I've moved beyond this stage, but I can see that you're trying, you know, and that, and so this, I needed this new idea that like, no, like he is supposed to be here and he belongs as much as I do. And I could hear Jody Moore's voice in my head saying, all this time I have been saying that I'll be very personal. Like I had a very specific experience on Sunday walking into church in the morning and seeing a leader who I've really struggled with for years because of this feeling that I think he is very comfortably in simplicity and it really bothers me. And I could hear Jody Moore's voice being like, oh my gosh, you know, all this time I've been saying that he is the barrier to my feeling like I belong. And I've been sitting here pushing him out in my own mind, just feeling so comfortable saying you're wrong and you're doing faith wrong. You're leading wrong. And you're the reason that I can't feel love and all. And I think that was really the real barrier. And I walked in and saw him and felt so much gratitude that like, thank you for being here and helping this be a four stage community. Like I want that. And you, it wouldn't be that without you. And, you know, and lots of people, but I've just never felt like real gratitude. And I felt like for the first time, I actually could be open to learning something from him I would listen, but I was listening for cues to help me recognize his stage. And this felt like I could imagine sitting and listening and actually being refined, actually growing myself and genuinely learning, because it sort of broke down that narcissistic belief that I know where he's going and where he should go and how he should do better.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I think, yeah, there is this temptation of narcissism, of the ego, of a kind of smugness that yeah. can come at any point along the road. And I think, I mentioned this earlier, but maybe the burden and the opportunity for people who are in a stage four, you know, place would be to create these bridges of understanding, between mm-hmm. the others who oftentimes can't even see each other or recognize each other. Right. Yeah. The downside is that everybody then views you with some degree of suspicion. If you're in this right. place, you know, the simplicity people think you're not fully on their team, but the people who are really going through perplexity, you know, who are really going through struggles and doubts, they also view you with a little bit of suspicion too. So it's the willingness to kind of absorb some of that and say, I recognize that, but I'm still going to do my best to like be here and create these bridges, create relationships where people can hear and understand and love each other. That maybe but it's a hard thing to do because you are absorbing the suspicion.
I love what David Brooks says about the edge of inside, that like you don't enjoy the loyalty of the approval and the loyalty of the insider or the outsider. And so you're just kind of in this very uncomfortable space, but like maybe that's the gift of stage three and four. And the gift of stage one and two is that they're going to keep creating those boundary markers and like creating the container to hold us all. And right. I just have never recognized that as something that I benefit from too. I benefit from the fact that we have an identity, and probably if we started in this stage four harmony, like I'm not sure how that identity would have ever been forged.
Yeah,
it may not have been strong enough, right? I'm thinking about Jared's presentation, where he mentioned being, I think, in a Sunday school class, and somebody had raised their hand, or the teacher had said something that was like totally like stage one, right? And then he said he could like start to sense other people like raising their hands who were going to correct, you know, and he was going to turn into this conflict, and instead he kind of inserted himself and validated both what the teacher or that first comment had said, but also then recognized, anticipated what was going to be said there, and in that moment did a kind of peace building. Yeah. But I mean, that's a skill set, and that is a gift that can be offered to the community that otherwise would polarize. Yeah. So we need we need people, you know, who have their stakes in the ground and feel very strongly about where they are, but we need some glue. We need some horizontal connectors to keep this all together.
Yeah. And I think also that, I mean, there's the idea that maybe that it's supposed to be hard too. Not that, you know, not that we're always going to get, not that acceptance is always going to be a reality, or, you know, an abundance of tolerance or whatever, but that when we go and we're sort of in tension ideologically, or, you know, in terms of where you're at in your faith journey, like it is going to be hard. And maybe that's the purpose. Like, I think we have a biological sort of need or desire for everything to be easy and effortless, but I think there's a spiritual need for things to be challenging. I think at least the way I imagine Heavenly Parents is that their project for us in this life is to grow. And as anyone that's ever, you know, participated in weight training knows, like the only way to grow is through significant amounts of tension, significant amounts of discomfort over a long period of time and consistently. And this goes back to Eugene England and why the church is as true as the gospel, right? Yeah. That church where we're meeting people that we don't agree with, that sometimes we don't like, that are so hard to love, that is what's causing the tension that actually allows us to grow over time.
Yeah, completely.
I think it's implanted where you say that you've never been in a bad ward, air quotes. Can you just talk about that for somebody?
You're like, so lucky, Patrick. Somebody? I've been in so many bad wards.
Would you like to name them, Tim?
Yeah, exactly.
He's joking.
No, I'm setting you up to just knock this out of the park and use me as a bad example.
Well, I mean, yeah, partly I'm lucky, and I have heard, you know, like I have a lot of friends who just tell me horror stories about some of the warts they've been in. I mean, the funny thing is that it's all oftentimes it's relative, right? That the friends of mine who experienced a particular ward as really hard, even to the point that they couldn't do it anymore. I'll bet if you polled other people in the ward, they'd say, "Oh, this is the best ward I've ever been in." Right. The people are so amazing and so forth. So it's, you know, a ward is several hundred people oftentimes. And so you're going to have really different experiences. So partly it's luck, on my side, but it's also, wards are partly what you make of them. And I know whenever I say something like that, it runs the risk of trivializing the experiences that some people are having that, again, are just really hard. Again, I've got really good friends here in Cache Valley who had some really tough stuff in their ward, including with their kids, and they had to end up going to a different ward, and now they're much happier, and they are whole again spiritually. They can feel the spirit in church in the way that, because of these interactions, they just weren't able to in their previous ward. So I know that happens, but most of the time I think there is a way that we can create space for ourselves. We can create space for others. We can recognize, I think part of what we've just been talking about can be a big part of it, of recognizing that the paradigm isn't to go to church with people who are like me. So that way I'm not disappointed or surprised when somebody says something that I disagree with. But you know, I think the great strength of Mormonism has been the way that it creates communities. And community is tough. Community is really hard. So again, sometimes it is oppressive and even abusive. But most of the time, most Latter-day Saint communities really are communities of care, where ordinary people are doing their absolute best at all of these different stages to create a place where people can experience God and serve each other. And so that's what I mean when I say I've never been in a bad ward, because I see what's going on in that ward, right? I see the amount of hours that people are spending in serving each other, right? And teaching my kids in primary. They may come home and I may disagree with something that they taught, right? I mean, like right now, like we're dealing with like the primary program is coming up, or even just, you know, they've been singing Book of Mormon stories and doing some of the hand signals that, you know, kind of the old fashioned Indian hand signals. And I don't love that. Right. And so we're thinking about, like, do we talk to anybody about it? Do we let it slide? I mean, you know, so we all have to like navigate these kinds of things within community, because it's personalities involved and people and what are the fights that you want to fight? Some things you're like, hey, I'm going to die on that hill. Other things you're like, maybe not. I can let this one go. We all have to discern how to make this work. But I think wards are amazing places where that marshal the talents of a lot of sincere people just doing their best.
Yeah. And to be clear, just in my joke, I'm saying that I have had a perspective that has created my reality many times in which I've been very judgmental of my ward. But I think uniformly I have been in wards that are full of people that are doing their best and that are acting the best way they know how to love everybody else in their ward. And obviously nobody's perfect, but I do want to be clear that even in our current ward, we are so surrounded by people who are just full of love. And when I am in a mindset where I'm going to church giving the benefit of the doubt, I see how Christ-like the people that surround me really, really are. Do you have any other practical steps? Say somebody's listening to this and saying, I want to have that perspective. Like, I want to look at these people charitably, but I'm just not feeling it. When I go into church, what I'm feeling is resentment or, you know, anger. And potentially then when I feel those things, I know I shouldn't be feeling them. So now I feel guilty or I feel ashamed of myself. Do you have practical steps that people can sort of just like start, I don't know, applying maybe day to day to start to work toward a place where they're feeling more, I guess, harmony, you know, toward their fellow community members?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not sure that I have the kind of silver bullet or magic wand. I do think I really believe in the promise that Moroni makes us when he tells us, you know, to pray for charity. And what that means is, for me at least, and because I've practiced this and I've seen it be real, I don't think it's something magical that just like you pray for it and then God, and then it like descends on you, you know, some kind of like vending machine thing. I think the act of praying for charity, and this can't even be proactive, like before you go to church on Sunday, right? What that does, I think what that prayer does, especially if it's a regular part of your prayer life, a regular part of your kind of contemplative practice, is it's already putting you in the mindset of saying, how am I going to orient myself with generosity towards other people? So it's not waiting for God to change it all, you know, magically, or to change other people even. It's sort of reorienting yourself in relationship to the situation. It takes, and it's hard. And again, it, you know, some days it just doesn't work. But it's a fundamental reorientation, I think, towards the members of our community. And then part of it, too, I sort of learned this lesson a long time ago, from my dad, who said, I think I was probably a teenager when he talked about this. He said, I don't go to church to learn anything. at this point. He says, if I learn something, great, fantastic. That's like, you know, cherry on top. But he says, I'm there first and foremost to worship God. I'm there to take the sacrament. I'm there to reflect on Jesus's atoning work for me and God's love for me, and then to reflect that back to others however I can.
Wow.
And so church gives me a structured opportunity where I can, in this space, where I can be there for somebody else. And that's, again, that's hard to do sometimes, especially, you know, other people sometimes control the classroom or control the pulpit and things like that. But I think when we go to church with that kind of attitude, that we're here for love of God and then love of other people, the vertical and the horizontal, I think it sort of changes our attitude.
I love that. And then it was so powerful. There are definitely eras of my life where I was going to church with really sensitive ears, and I'm just listening for those red flag words that will cue me that somebody is either with me or against me. And when that's the experience, that's exactly what you get. Like, you're going to leave feeling like you know who your friends are and you feel divided from everybody else. And I think if charity is your prayer, then it sort of changes. It changes the way you hear everything. Like, you, instead you're hearing things that make you feel connected. You're hearing pain and you're hearing things that resonate. And instead of sorting people, you're able to really just feel love. And yeah. And then it just doesn't seem like it matters quite as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful. Right. Thank you so much, Patrick. Are any final thoughts you want to leave us with before we sign off, just given the context of this discussion?
The one thing when I was thinking about what we were going to talk about, you know, it occurred to me that most of life is boring. Like, the vast majority of life is boring, and a lot of life is a letdown. And I was thinking about this actually, a couple different kind of analogies or metaphors. So one, like from the sports world, I love sports, and you know, like when you're watching like an amazing playoff game where so much is at stake and people are, I mean, there's so much emotion. It's incredible. And then to go to a regular season game, you know, if you're baseball, like one of 162 games, who cares what's going on? Even the players don't really care that much. Right. So there's some of that. I also remembered, I once, like, the best meal of my life, some friends took Melissa and I to this restaurant. Incredible. It's run by Jose Andres, the world famous chef. And wow. it was like, when we got there, the waiter was like, you know, do you want to order off the menu, or would you like the chef to take you on a journey? We're like, journey.
I'll take the journey.
So like, it was literally the most incredible culinary experience of my life. Like,
wow.
And then we went home, went to bed. And the next morning we opened the cupboard and there's like cereal, right? It's, I mean, that's what life is. That's exactly what life is. You mentioned Eugene England earlier, and it's great, you know, why the church is as true as the gospel. I always remember this one line from it where he says, he opens it with this example of, he was a kid, he was at a state conference, he wasn't even paying attention, he was teasing his sister. And then I think it was Harold B. Lee was talking, he was not even listening, but then something happened, like the spirit just like hit him like a ton of bricks. And he says, how many boring state conferences would I attend to be even once in the presence of such grace?
Wow.
Right. And so, like, life is boring. Life is tedious. Life is mundane. Anybody who's a parent knows this. Anybody who has a job knows this. Anybody who's a church member knows this. And so, so part of, I think, mortality, part of this experience of just being human, is like one foot in front of the other. Going through all of that, there will be transformational moments occasionally, right? There will be these just transcendent occurrences, but they're really rare. And part of what life is just like showing up as a parent, showing up as an employee, as a church member, to be in a place where you can be struck by this incredible moment of grace every once in a while. And then that gets you through the next morning of breakfast cereal.
Love it. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing your insights.
Yeah,
really, I think it's really, really going to be helpful.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Patrick Mason. And as a reminder, Patrick has a new podcast that he co-hosts with Jennifer Walker Thomas called Proclaim Peace. This podcast is sponsored by the Faith Matters Foundation and Mormon Women for Ethical Government, and you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. You can check out more at faithmatters.org.